certain items of physical evidence seized from the car, unsuccessful in that motion. But the second hearing was in regard to a blood test that was taken of Mr. Hood, and that was a successful, and the evidence of the blood test was suppressed by the trial court. That was on February 27, 2015. 5 days later, the state filed with the district court a notice of intent to file an interlocutory appeal. Thereafter, on April 1st, 33 days after the final order, the state filed its application with the Supreme Court for an interlocutory appeal. They included a certified copy of the judge's order, but they failed to file with their application a bill of exceptions. Now,
why was it that they didn't file a bill of exceptions?
Well, they won't blame the court reporter because the court reporter didn't have it prepared by the time of they filed their application. They never filed a press appeal for a bill of exceptions. They never made a report or a request to the court to set a date for the filing of the bill.
Did they file a press appeal for a date? Is there a preparation of bill of exceptions?
I do not believe so. I've never seen a press release. All that was filed was a notice of intent to file an appeal.
And we have the entire hearing. You're aware of
that. And I'm aware of it. In fact, I submitted items that I thought were essential to the discharge, but I believe that the state, their exhibits were the entire court file.
Thank you.
Now, the application goes to a single judge of the Court of Appeals, and within 30 days, that judge asks the state to show cause why the Bill of Exceptions wasn't filed with their application for interlocutory review.
I'm going to watch it back for just a second. I'm sorry for the interruption. No. I'm not sure I understand your argument. You seem to be suggesting that it was not the court reporter's duty to prepare the record.
Well, I don't know if it was the court reporter's duty to prepare the record, but I know that in the circumstance of appeals, that generally the appellant has the responsibility to ensure that the bill of exceptions is filed at the time that the court rules require it to be filed. And this isn't even a court rule here. This is a statute that says that the bill of exceptions, the transcript of the evidence, must be filed with the application for the interlocutory
review.
It would be, and it would have been really only relevant as to the second hearing that was held. That was done in the morning in Garden County. It wasn't an extensive record. A case that I failed to cite to you in the brief that should have been included in there, and it was the reason why the single judge's opinion eventually was that they lack subject matter jurisdiction for the interlocutory appeal. And it's a court of appeals case, State versus Ruiz Medina. It's at 8 Nebraska Appellate 529. And that's the case that tells us if you don't file your transcript of the evidence, you don't file your bill of exceptions with the application, you aren't conferring subject matter jurisdiction on the single judge. He lacks the ability. We know what subject matter jurisdiction is. It's the power of a tribunal to hear and determine a case of the general class or category to its proceedings in question for law and to deal with the general subject matter involved. So, The Court of Appeals asked the state to show cause why the bill of exceptions wasn't filed with their application. Thereafter, the state filed their affidavit stating that the court reporter was under the mistaken impression she had 7 weeks to prepare the bill of exceptions. For 8 months, that case pended. No briefs were done. No arguments were made on the issue of the blood draw. 8 months were spent with the state arguing that they had established subject matter jurisdiction. This cannot be considered the ordinary consequence of the defendant's motion to suppress evidence. The case cited by the state versus Case, that stands for the proposition that the time spent in an interlocutory appeal does not count against the clock of the state. I would concede that is good law, but it's not applicable to this case. There was not an interlocutory appeal in this case. The judge of the Court of Appeals did not have subject matter jurisdiction to hear an interlocutory appeal. The state had to follow the rules established by 29824 to obtain subject matter jurisdiction of that interlocutory appeal. The state failed to do that.
Are you attributing degree of fault to the state for not having the sessions on file?
I don't think it's an issue of fault. I'm not saying that they should have been sanctioned or punished by anyone, but there's a consequence to not filing a bill of exceptions. There's a consequence in any appeal if the appellant doesn't have a bill of exceptions prepared and filed. And while it requires the cooperation of the court reporter, there are steps that can be taken to ensure that you satisfy that requirement. And I don't know what steps the state took, but I don't think they showed anywhere in the record that they had to take any extraordinary steps.
What steps did they take?
Well, the first thing when I appeal a case, I file a press appeal requesting the preparation of a bill of exceptions.
Correct.
And in this case, the statute tells you the judge can give you time.
Okay, but that's different than forcing court. What could you actually do to force the court reporter to give this priority over somebody?
Well, my experience is that you can also talk to the trial judge, and you can ask him and tell him the importance of getting the bill of exceptions filed with the application.
Counsel, doesn't the statute only give the court discretion to extend that time by 30? It can't be any longer than 30 days. 30 days is the outside, isn't it?
30 days is the outside.
All right.
And I don't think that that's in any sense an unreasonable deadline.
Even if it was an unreasonable deadline in a particular case, what can the state do about it? What can the prosecutor talk about it under the statute?
The prosecutor has the ability to communicate with the court and the court reporter. But I don't think any of that matters in the sense that we would have established law. State versus Ruiz Medina, State versus McCarter, 12 Nebraska Appellate 657. If the state doesn't follow the statutory prescription to get this interlocutory appeal heard, they fail to confer subject matter jurisdiction on the court. There's no issue before the court. Is should that time be attributable to the defendant for filing a suppression motion? Should the state's failure in this instance? The state was notified within 30 days that the Court of Appeals had a jurisdictional problem in this case. Was the 8 months spent with the state objecting to that conclusion of law, based on case law and statute? It was within 30 days.
In response to that,
affidavits were submitted by the state. Basically, they blame the court reporter and the judge. I don't believe it ever said that. I think the only thing that the affidavit said, the explanation was that the court reporter thought she had 7 months.
Did not reflect what I heard.
And I'm sorry I didn't even get the state versus Rasek judge. I think it's controlling the distinction that the state had a right to appeal this suppression order does not mean that that time shall count against the defendant if they fail to perfect their appeal. And that's what RASIC was about. The delay was caused because the state took up an appeal of an issue and the court didn't have subject matter jurisdiction to hear it. It's on point and requires that that time, those 244 days that were spent on that fruitless appeal, do not count against the defendant and speedy trial calculation. They count against the state. But it was the same situation, Judge, in that there was any appeal. But it's still the same issue. There's no subject matter jurisdiction in the appellate court. And the case that RASIC most relied on, Commonwealth Malinowski, same situation. It was an appealable order in Commonwealth versus Malinowski, but they failed to certify their appeal, take the steps necessary to confer subject matter jurisdiction on the appellate court. And the courts have been consistent in this. They've run into this situation where the state, where it's the state's failure to establish subject matter jurisdiction, and time is spent on fruitless appeal. That time shouldn't count against the defendant. That time should count against the state on a speedy trial calculation. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Ms. Faust, good morning to you.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel, my name is Lacey Faust, Assistant Attorney General, representing the appellee of the state of Nebraska. It's the state's position that the entire time the state's appeal of the district court suppression order was pending should be excluded from the speedy trial clock. And before getting into merits, I just want to begin by noting, as I did in my brief, that there's two speedy trial clocks here. The first clock is for the motor vehicle homicide and misdemeanor charges that were originally filed in county court. The second clock is for the manslaughter and DUI serious bodily injury charges that the state added when it filed the information in district court. The clock on those two charges did not begin until after they were bound over. The state doesn't need the state's appeal time for the second clock. It does need it for the first. To the merits, I don't think it makes any difference that the state's appeal here was dismissed for lack of jurisdiction for failing to file a bill of exceptions. The relevant question here is, did it have the statutory authority to appeal? And it did under section 29.824. I think that I'm presuming the defendants would make the same or similar argument if the state had actually lost the appeal, which happened in Hayes, because he would argue that it's in no way attributed to the defendant. Look, I was right. I was right below. I'm right now. It shouldn't be attributed to me. And that's just not the case. They didn't find that. There was statutory authority, and that's the relevant question.
Do you agree with the position that expressed by counsel here this morning that failure to file a claim of bill of exceptions is jurisdictional rather than mandatory?
The Court of Appeals below disagreed on that. On the one judge opinion, it became a three judge opinion. Judge Inbody disagreed. He assumed without conceding and decided that it should be the blank should be placed in the court order and not on the state.
How did it become three?
I don't know, Your Honor. I don't know. Judge Pearl wrote it, and Judge Bishop was also on the panel, and then Judge Inbody defended it.
But it was an appeal from the denial or granting of the suppression.
Yes.
The statutory procedure says that's for one judge.
Yes.
And it was a published opinion,
was it not? Yes.
Did you
petition the state? I don't think the state can. I mean, if it's a one judge, the state can't be a bar, so I don't know. It did, and the state doesn't know how that happened, how we did that.
Does it matter?
I don't think it does, no. Because like I said, the relevant question is simply, does the state have statutory authority to appeal? It did, and therefore, it aligns with Hayes, and it is not contradicted by RASIC. But the whole point of RASIC versus RASIC was, hey, you cannot appeal from non-final orders. That's why you didn't have the statutory authority. RASIC even distinguished Hayes on that ground, and then actually, I think it was 12 days.
The point of us is you can't start burning up time when you're pursuing a non-appealable order.
Right, which just wasn't a non-appealable order. It was actually a mistake by the court reporter. and not she believed. She believed from this case by which I was just pursuing whether or not it's a threat of harm. Yes. The statutory minutes. Yes. Yes. The court reporter believed the state did file a threat of harm. The court reporter believed that she had 70 standard 7 weeks to file the bill. She not she had 30 and she filed it after the final day too late.
Is there a supplemental transcript in this case?
I don't believe so.
Because I'm looking at the transcript, all I'm seeing is the information, the motion for discharge, and the memorandum.
Yes, all of this information is offered as exhibits, the pleadings were. So it's going to be in the bill of exceptions. All the pleadings, the state offered at the motion discharge hearing, the pleadings below, it's part of the bill of exceptions.
It's not in
the
transcript.
No.
And the state
then the file presently? Yes. Yes, it did file. And even the court of appeals
noted that. That which transpired at the motion to suppress on the order relating to that.
I assume so. I don't know specifically what the recipe said. I know it was filed at ICE. Because he was suppressing or appealing from the suppression order, so it's hearing the
asshole.
Yes, yes, yes. It was under 29-824. So,
was the press being filed?
Yes, 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 it was. I didn't calculate that way, Your Honor. I don't know if the set trial date was ever set until the final one that we're talking about here. Well, I know that most of the motions fell under 4A, not 4B. So I don't think so. Continuance under which the legislature changes so that you can you waive your right if you ask for things beyond the original standard outline. I want to know also that the district court excluded the time from when the state filed its appeal on March 4th to when it spread the appeal on the mandate, which was November 2nd. I did take the same position in brief as shown by my calculations, although I mistakenly put the day of the court appeal opinion in parentheses. However, based on the calculation of Haynes, I actually think the entire time from when Hood filed his suppression motion all the way until the district court spread the mandate should be excluded because we're talking about 4A here. And under 4A, a motion is not finally disposed of until it's granted or denied, and it's not granted or denied until after the state's appeal or unless an appeal is not taken. It's only really 4 extra days, but I just thought I would correct what I believe the correct period of time is. If there are no further questions, we ask you to affirm the judgment of the district court.
Thank you very much. Is there any time for rebuttal?
He is over.
There is no time for rebuttal. We will go to the next case of the day, Logan versus Logan.